Dear Educator, re-listening to the interview with Lisa Clue and I published a little while ago, I feel really blessed how openly she spoke about her experience with an eating disorder. And I was moved during the interview, and I actually still am, of the impact of having an eating disorder has on the perception and the relationship of being in your body. And this week, while listening to a wonderful interview of Thomas Hubel with Alanis Morissette, again, that topic came up. What if the body does not feel like home, like Lisa also addresses? And I believe this is true for many people. So I guess that's what I feel called to share in this solo episode, where I will share some simple practices with you, three actually, to create and to start with embodiment from this question, this, and also this worry that I receive as question often from fellow educators. So as embodied educators, we can work in many ways with the body. It doesn't always have to start with the question, where do you feel it in your body? Because I know this can be quite a triggering question. If you've never realized, experienced, nor have been asked how it is to live below the neck, well, then where do you feel this in your body can be quite an imposing question. And there's one thing I would like to state. To understand where I'm coming from when sharing these coming practices for you to take it to your classroom. Because as educators, I truly believe we are change makers. We're lucky and gifted to be guides in the learning process of our students, whether this is in the high school setting or primary school and even university. Yes, people, also in university and in higher education, even though we work with adults, the embodiment story holds up. And I think especially in these institutes, we tend to be celebrated for being smart, for our intelligence, for our brain. More diplomas, more articles, more publishing, more cerebral pressure. And guess what? Even this pressure on intelligence has a super, super duper impact on our embodiment and our relationship to our bodies and our brains. Therefore, I plea for more embodiment. Let us educators be truth tellers, soul shakers, and movement makers in education. And before I share three practices with you, yeah, I'm going to do this. I feel the urge to share a little bit more. And I can't not share this message. So I would love to read to you this paragraph from the inspiring book I've just finished reading. And it's called The Soul of Learning, this book, written by Mary Keita and Vira Watson. And I'd love to read a little bit more, which also brings us into embodiment. And then I'll share the three practices with you. Because it touches me. And I hope then sharing this part of the book with you might touch you as well as educator listening to this podcast. Being human is not a noun, but a verb. Being human is a praxis of humanness. The work before us does not end with who do I want to become. It also entails what legacy I want to grow forward. In The Scholar as Human, from Peters in 2021, he discusses the disembodied voice that comes from divorcing ourselves from connection. He writes, as human beings, we are larger and more complicated than the positions we occupy or roles we play. Learning as the practice of freedom is not for the faint of heart. It demands the courage to love, not to just personally, but also collectively. And this is the antithesis to the work of so many school systems nowadays. And the physical, intellectual, and structural violence, one could say, of toxic, oppressive ecosystems. Nevertheless, inside these institutions where we are all teaching, with compassion. We, educators, are still responsible for the lives of our students. We are implicated in the work of our society, not just victims of circumstance. There is no education without educators. When we change, the system changes. And this point cannot be understated. We need to turn inwards if we want to drastically reimagine schooling. And I know many of us do want to change the system. There's many networks I've encountered wanting to change the system. So shape-shifting ourselves shape-shifts learning, not the other way around. We are sovereign and we can reclaim it. So this came from the book, The Soul of Learning, that I wanted to share with you. And now, let's get to our practice, the first practice for working with embodiment. And this one is coming from Stacey Haynes, the expression, and then the way I gave form to it is coming from her with a mix of my own. When the body does not feel like home, then connect to the land. Connecting to the land can really build resilience over time. And land can be many forms and many shapes depending on your cultural background. So more specifically, individually and collectively, create a ritual in your classroom to connect to nature. And this practice can depend on time, of course, and space availability. This can be through imagination, just having a tiny, teeny moment of imagining something of the land, of nature, can already have the power of state shifting. And we're working with land because we're part of it, but it's often a safe space to go to visit with our bodies, you know, and that can build resilience over time if we visit it more often. And you can do this, I said, like through imagination, through the senses. And again, this can be inside the classroom or outside, depending on the availability and the setting, the time you have. But it can be like looking at the sky, touching plants, grass, trees, smelling maybe the city where you're at, the classroom, the outdoors, listening to what sounds from the outside you register, from inside the classroom. And you could also do tasting, and this actually brings back a memory of my own, because it can be quite triggering strong emotions and memories. But I once tried to make my students in global trend watching, and this is an international program in higher education, taste licorice. Not to be recommended. First of all, maybe, you know, stay off candy if you teach in the classroom, but licorice is quite, I am very fond of it as a Dutchie, but not everybody loves it, and then your exercise is over. So to get back to the topic, I'm riffing here, I'm getting derailed. When you have them connect to the land, then ask them what they notice and let them name it. It's the game of notice and name. So just make them connect to land, nature, however it's available in your classroom. Can be as brief as 10 seconds to 30, 2 minutes, whatever time you have, to start asking them to notice and name. What do they notice? And let them name it. And then you can ask them to share it in the group, share it with a buddy, reflect on it in writing, let them make art, let them draw, create something from what they have experienced. And then you get back to your curriculum. It's about building the muscle. It doesn't need to take much time. It is more about building the muscle memory over time if you do it regularly with tiny moments to create a group ritual where they learn to collect inner data about themselves, to collect data from inner learning and then combine that with outside learning. Because I believe raising authentic students who can really step into their agency can only thrive sustainably when they're connected with the both, inside and outside learning. Like Meister Eckhart says, the outer work can never be small if the inner work is great. The outer work can never be great if the inner work is small. All right, second practice to build is also based on the element of land. The previous was quite literally, and the power of the land and nature to absorb it and let it nourish you in some way. And the second exercise builds on the land being a bigger connection to where we come from, and a way to connect to where we come from in many cultures is through our names. And I didn't come up with this practice. It comes from the book I just quoted before, The Soul of Learning. And I'm going to read their introduction to this exercise so you get it. And then I will share the questions with you. So let me get you the page where the exercise is. All right, I'm going to read the introduction. We know that who we are is central to our teaching. And we know that who our students are is essential to learning. Do we know our students' names? And this might seem a simple question, but it has serious ramifications. Names help identify us amid and among our cultures, ancestors, place, and land. Naming is a process of locating us in space and time. Similar to sacred teachings that refine our internal compass, names also play this essential function. Names help point us to ourselves, and this is why the famous rapper Kendrick Lamar explains, if I'm going to tell a real story, I'm going to start with my name. And actually, I'm now making a movement with my hand to emphasize. And then the text says, let's be real with one another. Let's pronounce our names correctly. So that's the first practice. Pronounce our names correctly. Of your students, practice them, because it's a sacred welcoming to who they are. In many places throughout the world, naming is not neutral. It is ceremonial. Names can serve as a compass of connection and self-determination. Sometimes people even feel the need to change or gather a new name to reflect a deeper truth of who they are and hope to become. So this is because names have power, a conduit to our past and a path to our future, directly influencing our direction and pulling us towards some people and away from others. Yeah. So poetry, because that's it's actually coming in this exercise from a link to poetry. Poetry is the language of the soul, and it can help students untie their tongues and traverse their feelings and ideas with meaning making. So simple prompts like, what's your name, or where I'm from, can open up the classroom space in profound ways. And this is also supported by research of Watson. So the questions related to this text and this practice are, and please withhold yourself from assumptions or judgment or labeling when reading a name on the list. Don't assume. Connect your ear to your heart and listen when asking your students, what's your name? The second question, what does your name mean? The third question, where are you from? And then the fourth could be, depending on the age and what your students are capable of, what names sound like home to you? The four questions, what's your name? What does your name mean? Where are you from? And what names sound like home to you? Because I tend to go off timing a lot, in the book is an example of somebody, Linda May. So I'll refer you to the book I'm reading, and then it's also to be found in Linda Christensen's own book, In Rhythm and Resistance, Teaching Poetry for Social Justice, and I'll put it in the links, where you can find an example of Linda herself having created a poem of what her name means to her, which is very inspiring. And then the third practice, after there's a kind of a build-up, you know. First we had the land and just connected the land, and now we had the land, but then connected to your name, of where you're from, connecting to maybe your ancestors, connecting to the surroundings, like literal nature, like in New Zealand. You know, they connect to their mountain, they connect to their water, their river, and they connect to their land, which symbolizes something. And now the third practice is on the scale of actually starting to come into the body, but it's coming from the work of Amber Gray. And it is also related a lot to the polyvagal work, which is related to our tendency to turn only within when we're in pain. And that we only tend to notice in that situation of pain. And our bodies are often listened to when feeling something we would like to get rid of. But Amber, in her work, also related to the question of when our bodies feel scary to enter, she says, start with physical comfort. So ask your students, just on a regular base, like addressing the body, like the pink elephant in the room, and just ask them, and also you can start with yourselves, are you physically comfortable? So let's do it now. I actually am not. Are you physically comfortable? No, I'm not sitting totally comfortable. And I'm sitting on one of my legs, so I'm now stretching my leg, so can have a blood flow because actually my left ankle was numb. So ask your students the question, are you physically comfortable right now? And then let them notice, maybe name it, depending on how you want to do it, and allow them a little time to make a posture change or just a tiny change. Doesn't need to be that they need to go out and run. You know, you can teach them other practices to get them more involved into the teaching you're about to give. But you can give them 30 seconds to state shift. And if actually somebody just wants to jump up and down for those 30 seconds, why not? If that's what they need to release and then engage in your lesson. So make them, give them ownership and let them connect to their own sensations, and in a good way. That's the whole point, in a good way, to notice, not because of discomfort, because we tend to ignore our bodies often and then create so much discomfort that we don't notice that we need to pee until it's almost too late. Yeah, so let them connect to physical comfort. And just make that a ritual as well. And just ask them to notice, state shift, to what feels good, and then that's it. Without talking, making meaning, continue your lesson. And I'm sorry, I didn't turn off my email, but I'm not going to re-record again. And that's it. Those were the three practices. Land, as in nature, connect to nature. Land, as in names, know your students' names and ask them for the meaning. And then the third one, physical comfort. I hope one or more of these practices speak to you. And if you are experimenting, I would love, love, love to hear your experience and what comes up in your classroom. So tag me on Instagram under the name Bodylicious. Send me an email, liz@theembodiededucator.net, or contact me through LinkedIn, and I would love to hear your stories. Let's reshape education together, one name at a time.